Thank you to TNG Coaching for sponsoring this week's episode of Recess Duty. TNG.Coaching's vision is to teach values through activity and experience, to guide creativity, instill confidence, and champion self-worth and celebrate identity. This journey begins by reflecting on our own performance, by collecting our thoughts and feelings on paper, both positive and negative. We begin to discern ways to respond to challenges. Opening a personal dialogue and sharing concerns has been proven to create deeper bonds with peers. Journaling how these relationships evolve can help assign roles and build the support structure every team needs to function effectively. When complete, your journal will stand as a lasting reminder of your commitment to your cause and ambitions for personal and professional growth. You can find the Coach's Journal on Amazon and the link down below, or go to tng.coach for more information.
Welcome to Recess Duty, a podcast for educators to come together to share struggles, but also celebrate successes by sharing stories and ideas in a safe and supportive environment to collaborate with one another. Here's your host, Levi Allison.
Hey everyone, this is Recess Duty with your host, Levi Allison, and today we're talking with consultant and author Tanya Latanzio. We'll be discussing their story and journey in education. Thank you so much for joining us, Tanya. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you, Levi. Thank you so much for having me on. I always feel very humbled when people reach out and say, would you like to have a discussion with me? I feel very special. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
Of course. And, you know, and people are reaching out because you are very present in social media. You're always reaching out. You're always asking really great questions on different Twitter chats and such. And so it's very apparent that you're very collaborative and very an educator to heart.
Yes, I hope so. I hope that's what comes across. Number one, passion for education. And number two, hopefully, that wanting to collaborate and wanting to connect with people.
For sure. And isn't that all what we're trying to do, is find people to connect with?
Absolutely. And when you find those like-minded people, magic happens.
Oh, so true. So true. So Tanya, tell us a little bit about yourself for our listeners out there and how you got into education.
Yeah, well, I started teaching in Australia, and then I discovered the beauty of international teaching, which I really didn't know much about, and moved it to Indonesia in a school that was implementing the PYP, and something I'd never heard of. This is back in 2000. So there weren't that many schools then, of course, and became the PYP coordinator of that school, a teeny, teeny, tiny, tiny school, and then moved to UNIS in Hanoi as the PYP coordinator. And in that time became an IB workshop leader, and then moved to Singapore to work for the IB, which is such a privilege, just such an incredible privilege. I feel that role just taught me so much, because you had this opportunity for the first time to be in and out of so many different schools and just learn from people, right? I mean, I always feel that, you know, as a consultant, there's such a reciprocal thing that happens between the teams you're working with, but also then that ability for you to learn from people as well. So I just learned so much with the connections, the people, the workshop leaders. And then I decided to go out on my own with Andrea Mueller, and I've been consulting since. So yeah.
Wow.
Thumbs up very quickly.
Yeah, that's a journey. Holy moly. That's great.
I'm now living in Singapore. So, and I've been here now for 16 years.
Wow. Wow. Congrats. That's awesome. Tanya, with all of that happening, what is something you're very excited about today?
Yeah, today, look, I've just had the privilege lately of working with teachers. I've been doing a lot of planning with teachers, and I just get, there's something very, very exciting when you plan with teachers and you're really putting a focus on this conceptual nature of learning. So I've just finished planning with a couple of teachers in Australia in two separate groups. And you're opening up this learning, you're opening it up for transdisciplinary learning, you're opening it up for learner agency, and you're giving so much more scope for that. And when teachers walk away and they're like, I'm so excited to do this with the kids, it just excites you. So I think that to me is really exciting, when teachers are inspired to go and teach children, because you know that inspiration then carries on hopefully to the children and they get excited about it too. And so that was my morning this morning. So it was very lovely to have a chance to plan with teachers and to feel that excitement.
Oh man, you're speaking my language with transdisciplinary learning and looking at how to connect concepts across multiple disciplines to create something more than what we could have done it by ourselves is something that we all try to achieve. But you are absolutely correct with like that inspiration is infectious, right? Like that really exciting planning goes into the lesson. That lesson goes into the kiddos come back excited. We get more excited. And it's just that cycle that never repeats.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's what you want. I mean, we still want to challenge children. Of course, we still want them to grapple with things. So everything's not easy. But again, I think it's that idea of motivation, right? And, you know, we know students are motivated when they're challenged, when they have some control in their learning, when they have some choice in their learning, when they get to collaborate in their learning. So if we can think about learning around those ideas, I think it gets really exciting for kids and they don't mind the challenge because, you know, they've been involved in it or they're excited about it and they're motivated by it as well.
I was in a professional development last year with Andy Vassily, and he talked a lot about finding your entry points. So like if this was too easy or that's too hard, but finding that middle ground. And I found that students really, once they were able to identify what was too easy and what was too hard and that just right challenge zone, they were skyrocketing. They really did want to challenge themselves and continue learning and to really push their understanding.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's that idea of giving students options for what that might look, because it's very hard to say challenge yourself if you've got no idea what we're talking about, right? I think,
absolutely,
you know, we use
sure.
language in education with children without actually going through and saying, well, this is what a challenge is. What does it feel like? What does it look like? You know, how can we overcome that? Now let's think about your learning. How will you then be challenged? And so it's about the idea of embedding those into your practice in a sense so it just becomes a part of the learning. It's not an added on anymore. And so it's setting up procedures and practices that allow that to just naturally happen when children are making choices over their learning. And we know they're making the right choice because they understand what that involves.
Again, you're speaking my language. I could listen to that all day long. So Tanya, you mentioned about setting up procedures and systems to allow for students to continue challenging themselves. So have that agency. If educators are listening and want to try something tomorrow, like a procedure or a system to help with choice or to help with having students self-select some more challenging material for them to continue growing and to grapple with, as you say, what are some stuff that they can do?
Yeah, I think I think one of the main thing is when you're thinking about learning and you're thinking about the engagements you're putting out in front of children, I think one of the things we really want to think about before we do this is this something that requires students to think? That's one of the most important things, right? Is this something that requires them to make sense of their learning? So I'm not having to feed them. They're having to tell me. I always say that, you know, what we want to do is put things in students' way to help them learn. And then they tell us what they've learned from that experience rather than us telling them what they should learn. And then we take the learning from there, right, with misconceptions or interests or wherever that takes us. And so I think it's thinking about starting there and then thinking, well, what are some different engagements we can offer students that are going to give them that chance to think, to make sense of their learning? And the other one, of course, is to collaborate in their learning as a way to hear different perspectives and learn from each other. And then we can say to them, well, what are you interested in doing? So I think the most important thing to me is making sure that our engagements are purposeful, mm-hmm. are meaningful, and are really going to require students to sort of have a level of thinking with that learning and what we want, and then having them have choices with what that might look like. And the other thing I've been talking a lot about with teachers is also trying to bring in a lot more creativity into our classes. I don't think it matters what age students are. I think that's a really important thing. And of course, the beauty of teaching conceptually is when we think about concepts, there's so many ways we can have students represent them creatively. Here are some loose parts. Represent your understanding of what identity means to you using them, or you know, go out and take an image of where you see perspective and bring it back into the classroom, or create a visual that shows your representation of that. And so I think, you know, even giving students choices in how they represent the concept can be a really lovely way to start. And just to, again, as I say, to bring in that level of creativity into the class as much as possible. I'm really trying to push the idea of using materials. So, you know, here's some clay or here's some wire. Represent your understanding of interdependence, for instance, you know. So I think there's lots of ways we can bring ideas like that in particular if we're focusing more on conceptual learning as opposed to content, because that idea to represent creatively concepts is, it makes sense. It's beautiful because you see this amazing thinking. And I think the nice thing when you do that is that kids get to blow you away. And what a joy that is when they come up with things and you're, that's just incredible. You've blown my mind that you come up with that. So we want to make sure there's that space, right, for that to happen.
Wow. Absolutely. I hate using the word absolutely. I use it too much and he'll edit this out. But like, that was amazing. Like, I'm just sitting here thinking, I was like, I could listen to that all day. Absolutely. I totally agree. You know, I always say I'm a facilitator of learning. Like, I do not know everything. I will never know everything, but I know different ways that we can learn. And I know different ways we can approach different things. And I know different materials that we could use to help us. And I always say, I'm going to give you all the tools. I'm going to ask lots of different questions. I'm going to reflect with you. But at the end of the day, I want you to do the learning. I want you.
That's it, right? Yeah. And I always, you're an active participant in this learning.
Yes.
You know, and I think that's the key, right? That active participant. Yeah.
Yes. And I always say, you know, if I'm doing all the learning and thinking, what are you doing? You've got to show me the thinking. And for some of the kids, it is much harder than what they realize when it isn't just a fill in the blank answer, or when it isn't just a black and white answer of 2 + 2 = 4. And again, one of the best math lessons I've ever saw was the answer is 10. What is the question?
Yes. Yeah.
Like those, and like you said, blew you away. Those kids spent the whole day on so many different concepts and standards and content, and so you name it, they did it based on this one thing. And it was just incredible.
Yeah. And there's a great quote, that Harry Silver and Jay McTighe use, that they say when they talk about deep learning, they talk about that this type of learning has to be earned by the learner.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's really nice. So the idea that you have to earn it, right? It's not something we can give you. And in their discussion about deep learning, so I think that's a really nice way to think about it. And I do want to say, though, it doesn't mean that there's not time for some direct instruction, because there are sometimes where certain students need that, and that's really important. But it's that idea of we're adapting and changing our learning based on children. It's not, you know, based on what the textbook says or what the next stage is in the curriculum says. It's what are the needs of the students in my class? You know, some children might need a little bit more skill development in an area, but it doesn't mean everyone does at the same time. So it's that flexibility, right, in the teaching and learning.
And being in a very skill-based discipline like music, that has come up so much in different workshops of how do I teach these students music through inquiry when we haven't built the skills necessary for them to be successful. And I always say, and I love Trevor McKenzie making its inquiry mindset, that inquiry is not a subject. It is the way to how we approach something. I'm going to help you explore these skills, but I'm going to do it through a way that allows you to explore and create and reflect rather than me just dictating X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think music teachers, PE teachers, and art teachers are so good at that. I have this amazing privilege of working with specialist teachers, and it's such an incredible joy. And when you see them in the class, that's what they're doing. It's through this feedback, through the formative assessment. Stop, let's look at so-and-so. What are we noticing? I think the way you all teach skills is phenomenal, actually. The ones that I've seen, I'm always blown away.
Agreed. And I have worked with some amazing specialists as well who are just absolutely phenomenal educators. And I'm thinking of a few PE educators, because I was not a good student in physical education by any stretch of the imagination. And I have one teacher in particular I'm thinking of who he worked so hard to allow every student in PE to be successful, regardless of their athleticism. And he says, because of inquiry and because of choice, we are allowed to do that. When if I was just teaching in the States and we were just doing soccer, we would miss a lot of kids who may not be interested in soccer or who may not be so athletic mm-hmm. in that. And so it's really great to see.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, no, it's, I think there are a lot of teachers at each step, but it, and you know, cause you've got, they are skill-based subject areas. Of course,
for
you
sure.
can't learn a musical instrument or learn to play a sport or learn the finesse of painting skills. If you don't have those skills. And so they're really important, but it's how you go about teaching them, exactly as you're saying.
Oh, that was so wonderful. Tanya, what are some great resources out there that you have been privileged to or have witnessed that would help us with implementing some of these systems and procedures to allow our students a little bit more choice in their learning?
Yeah, look, I think one of the things that you do as a teacher is you hone your own craft, right? It's such mm-hmm. a craft. It's the beauty of it. And you never fully get, like, we're always trying to improve. I mean, all of us, you know, myself, mm-hmm. I'm always reaching out to people to try and improve my craft as well. And so I think you've got to sort of build your repertoire of strategies, right? You know, and of course we've got the thinking routines from Mark and Ron. I mean, they're amazing to use.
For sure.
But again, it's that idea of what thinking do you want, therefore what routine do you use? So again, I think it's sometimes it's very easy to pick up a book and try all the different strategies, like, oh, I'm going to try this, I'm going to try that, I'm going to try that. To me, it's really thinking about what type of learning are you looking for, what evidence of that learning are you looking for, therefore then what are we going to put in front of students that's going to elicit that type of learning or that type of evidence, whether you're just looking for kids to be curious or whether you're looking for them to understand something. And so I think it's building that repertoire of strategies. I mean, all of Kath Murdoch's books have got beautiful strategies in them for you to be able to pick up and sure. use as well. My book, Taking the Complexity Out of Concepts, that's got a lot of strategies in there. So I think it's really just building that repertoire so you're no longer having to think so much about it. Like, oh, I'm going to go for that one because this is what I'm looking for. I know that strategy is going to be really good for doing that. And then that way, what you can do is you can say, I'm going to give kids, I've got some students who are really struggling with that. This will be a better strategy for them. This one requires some more abstract thinking. So I'm going to give that for the students who are really at quite a high level of understanding of conceptual learning. This one's going to be more about sort of maybe describing because that's where they are. So that idea, once you just keep building those strategies, you have more options and choices for yourself. And again, bringing the creativity always.
Yes. And you know, I've being in a very creative art form, kids are just wanting to be creative. They're just eager to just try and to make a mess and just see how it goes. And I just think sometimes we as educators kind of get in the way of it because we are very, a lot of us are very like, we like it this way, we like it this way, we like it this way. And I had a great friend always tell me, he's like, you're going to be a great educator if you can understand what organized chaos is. And so that is my goal all the time, is to work on organized chaos.
And it works, right? Something always comes out of it. And I think the other thing is, and with that organized chaos, right, sometimes it doesn't go well. Like sometimes and I think it's powerful as a teacher to try something new and to sort of say, okay, I took a risk. Sorry. Sorry, kids. Let's we'll try something different, you know. But I think that if we don't take risks and we don't try anything, we never know. And of course, most of the time it works out beautifully. And that's the other thing. I think, you know, it's really good to just try a new strategy even once a week to see how that goes or what that looks like. And the other thing is this. There's so much available to us in terms of resourcing. I think, you know, we sort of think about resourcing as the internet and books, but there's amazing artifacts. There's amazing things just outside our classrooms that children can learn from. So I think it's also just thinking bigger about when we think about students investigating or researching, what are we using for that? What does that look like? Where are the real people, the real places, the real artifacts? You know, I like to use quotes a lot. So I think it's just thinking about some different ways to do things, I think, as well. So I think if teachers do that, then you've got a lot more choice, right? So we've got choice in resourcing, choice in materials, choice in engagements. And so just thinking about different ways to do things, I think.
For sure. And also like stories and perspectives and experiences. And I always think, you know, we are ourselves greatest resource when we work as a team. And, you know, why am I going to talk about X when so-and-so has actually lived there?
That's, you know, that to me, I've been really big on this, just this idea of storytelling, right? Just listening to people's stories to understand, to build empathy. I just think it's so incredibly powerful to hear people's experiences and for kids to hear people's experiences and to hear their stories. And as you said, there's so many stories in our schools that are worth telling and worth hearing. That human connection, I think, yeah.
Oh, it absolutely is true. So, Tanya, where can people find you if they want to connect with you?
You can find me. I'm on Twitter on IGE Educators. You can email me at, it's such a long email. You know, when you first go into a business and you set your email up and you go, oh, that'll be good. And they're like, oh my gosh, it's just taking forever to type all the time. It's Tanya at, it's so long. It's Tanya at innovativeglobaled.org. So you can find me there as well. And LinkedIn, of course, on Tanya Latanzio. So people can find me in all those places.
Awesome. And we will have all of those links in the show notes below. Tanya, we ask all guests here at the Recess Duty, what is something you remember about recess growing up?
Oh, recess growing up. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I remember there was three of my friends. It's back in primary school. So, you know, I was really young. Three of my friends, and each day two of us, would gang up against the other one and run away from them. That's mean, isn't it? And then the next time I'd be the one missing. But it would happen every day. And I just can't work out how we didn't work out. This is really stupid. Yeah. All of us are oh. I remember like, how did we not work that? I'm not kidding. Every day it would be someone different. And we do this for ages. And the other thing I do remember also was that when you were in grade six, because we go to grade six in Australia, you had this, like it was such a big deal because you got to give out the sports equipment at break time. So kids could come and borrow and you'd have to write their name down and then you'd have to chase them up if they didn't return it. And I remember feeling very, very empowered and responsible back then as a 12-year-old chasing around these grade one kids to bring back their balls.
That's awesome.
That was my recesses.
I love it. Thank you, Tanya, for coming to this week's episode of Recess Duty. Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss our next episode. I'm Levi Allison, and I hope you have a great day of learning, everyone. Goodbye.
Thank you so much, Levi. Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Recess Duty. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, please share this podcast with other educators so they can join the fun. And that is the end of our Recess Duty.